Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And here we are with our weekly segment, Iceman Insights, starring webmaster and senior writer for the IcemanManiacs.com, Michael Shockley, here in our ninth episode, and not canceled yet.
That's true. We are still here. We're two months in, and it's a sensation that's sweeping the world, or at least southwestern Indiana. Yeah.
Or at least my household. So anyways, another great week. Hey, we'll take weeks like this anytime. Overtime loss against Cincy and then two wins this weekend back on Ford Center ice. Ford Center starting to give us the home ice advantage.
Yeah. The Icemen have now won four straight games at home, which I don't know that they even did that last year with all the wins that we had. There was losses sprinkled here and there. I don't know that there probably was a time or two that we won four in a row, but the way this season started, to have won four in a row at home now is like a breath of fresh air, and it's wonderful. It was a very good weekend to think that a team that started 0-6-1 is now 4-0-1 in their last five, and somehow, someway, only 2 points out of a playoff spot right now. Granted, the other teams in front of us do have some games in hand, but just considering where things started, to be 2 points out, regardless of the number of games that have been played, that shows the progress that this team has made.
Yeah, and you heard it here. Do not panic. Rich Cromm is a good coach. Todd Robinson is a good captain. All along, we've tried to calm everyone down. Go to the Maniac Asylum on Facebook if you want the other rendition of Ryan Huff saying fire coach Cromm and everyone else crying and whining and getting rid of their season tickets and everything else. And all of a sudden, how did it ever happen? We have a hockey team here.
I don't know. I think it's still Cromm's fault. He's terrible.
Yes. Yeah, if you're going to say it in October, you better still be saying it now in December if you threw Cromm or Robinson under the bus.
Yeah, it's easy to squawk when things aren't going well, but you got to stick to your guns when things turn around with the same people that you're arguing about and shooting down early on.
I am 100% behind. I am a pro Rich Cromm backer. I think the guy's awesome. He's got 500 games of NHL experience. But I will say this. We may have a rough road ahead of us losing Alan York, because it really looked like for once, first time in Rich Cromm's tenure, he had a goaltender that he could go to at any point in time, and now he's been ripped away, torn out of our lives.
Yeah, but I think we're going to miss York, but I also think it's going to be interesting to see if we do get another goalie back down. All indications are that we will get someone else sent down from Springfield. It hasn't happened yet.
Oh, it didn't?
As of right now, it has not happened.
Then what was that post that Dixie put on Facebook?
When?
Hold on. We are now pausing the show because we could do this. Hold on. We're going to play music. This just in, breaking news. Go ahead, Michael Shockley.
Breaking news apparently posted on Facebook this morning, as of
by
when we record this.
Drew Campbell, superstar.
Yes, from FalconsAHL.com, the Springfield Falcons have indeed sent Paul Dayton down to replace Alan York, which does not surprise me one bit. In fact, I believe I called that last week.
Yes, indeed you did.
Said that York could be here long term, and if not, they'll call him up and send Dayton down to get him some work. And apparently, that's exactly what's going to happen.
I think what you actually said was you wouldn't be surprised if Springfield just used us for their third goaltender, just rotated
more or less
every
yeah.
six games.
Right. Yeah. So we could see Dayton for a while, get him a little extra work, so that he's not just riding the pine all the time. And then once he's had some work, they may call him back up and send York back down and let York get a little more work, because Curtis McElhaney is starting in Springfield right now, and he's not going anywhere. He's playing lights out. He's having a career year, setting records. So they're not going to go away from him. The question is then, how much work does their second guy get? And right now, he's not getting much. I think McElhaney's played 18 games, and Dayton had only played 5. But he's got good numbers while he's been in limited action, which is hard sometimes to put up good numbers when you're not seeing much work. But he's played 5 games, and he's got a .222 goals against and a .930 save percentage in the AHL, which, you know, those numbers could translate to even better numbers here. So I don't necessarily know that we're going to see a big drop-off from York to Dayton. I think that's more or less just plugging and playing a different guy that could theoretically give you essentially the same production.
We'll talk about York a little bit more when we get to Friday's game, but it all started Wednesday in Cincy. It's nice to have a road trip, bus trip that's just going out and coming back. And
The
Iceman played a lot better, getting the overtime loss. Hey, anytime you can get a point on the road, it's a good victory.
Yeah. Yeah, we were down 2-1 late in the game and got a late goal to force overtime. No goals scored in overtime, went to a shootout, and we lost 3-2. York was excellent. He scored made 36 saves on 38 shots. And there was a bit of a controversy in that game. Rich Crom said that, and a couple of Cincinnati fans actually confirmed from what they saw, that the Iceman scored a goal that went through the net and was not called a goal. Play continued. And Cincinnati then went down and scored a goal of their own. So the non-call on the goal was essentially a two-goal swing and made the difference in the game. So you look at it and figure, well, we got a point, but we probably should have had two. But still, anytime you can get a point on the road against a good team, you'll take it. So that was a good way to start the little stretch. And then Friday and Saturday, it just got better and better. Friday's game was incredible, 8-5 over Toledo at home.
And bizarre, too.
It was a very odd game. It was jam-packed, too. Every period felt like an entire game.
Yep.
Because there were lots of goals, there was hits, there was fights. It was a wild game.
Karpovich looked, even the saves he did make, he just had an off night.
Yeah,
he looked like he was going down just a half second too early or something, and he had the one shot that goes off his waffle board, pops over his head and into the net, and just a couple of bad breaks, and then Yorkie comes in and just settles the ship right down.
Yeah, and major credit to Crom, too, because when it was 3-2 after one. We were only down a goal. And a lot of times a coach is going to stick with their guy, even if he doesn't necessarily look on that night. And Rich pulled the trigger and got Karp out of there and put York in. And York, he played very well down the stretch. And I don't know that we win that game if he doesn't make that change in net. That was a huge thing. It kind of flies under the radar because it doesn't happen in the middle of play. And, you know, you just come out of the locker room with a different goalie. And
it doesn't fly that much under the radar when the goalie's got bright red pants.
Well, that's true. Yeah, it's pretty hard. You can see those things from space. But yeah, York came in, played really well, and that was a big thing. The other key moment in that game was the 3 goals in 45 seconds. When you're down 4-2, the way this team has played this year a lot, you figure, oh boy, you know, this could come unraveled here. And then we score 3 goals in 45 seconds, and the building was just going crazy. And the Iceman never really looked back. Even though you score 3 goals in 45 seconds, you're still only up by a goal. So it's still a game. But that completely took the wind out of Toledo's sails. They didn't look the same the rest of the game. They took a timeout and settled things down a little bit, but they just never really looked like they were going to win that game again. It felt like it was an Iceman victory, just a matter of time.
Toledo, I really thought, well, they went up 4-2, that they would just dump the puck in and be tight checking, and they would just grind out a 4-3 victory, a 5-3 with an empty netter. And just like you said, the Iceman just came tearing back, and it was pretty awesome to see. And the other thing that really impressed me, I don't know if they ever announced the attendance officially over the intercom. It was a small Friday night crowd, maybe about 1,100, 1,200 people there. It was super loud.
Yeah.
And you have 1,200 maniacs in that building. Man, I'll take that against 3,000-4,000 anywhere else in the ECHL, because they were loud. Brad Perkins bringing it with the cowbell. 3 goals and in 45 seconds, and Toledo calls a timeout, and he's down by the scorekeeper's box, pumping up the crowd, jumping up in the music. It was a spectacular night.
It was really cool. I think the official attendance was 3,600 and change.
That's through the Iceman calculator matrix thing.
Yeah, they used a multiplication instead of addition. But it was a crazy loud. It was one of those games where it sounded like 4,000 or 5,000 people because the crowd brought their A game, and that goes a long way too. We've talked about it before. It doesn't necessarily matter how big the crowd is; it's how loud they are. Because you can have huge crowds that sit on their hands and don't do anything. Other teams do, but when we have a small crowd like that, it seems like almost that sometimes when we have a smaller crowd, it gets louder because it's all of the regulars.
Mm-hmm.
So things kind of move around the building better than when there's a whole bunch of new people that don't necessarily know the chants and don't know when to cheer, and they're not as familiar with the Iceman experience. And I think that was proof Friday night, because it was crazy loud when we scored. And then when we had the two hat tricks in the third period, Wade McLeod in his first game with the team makes a hell of a first impression by scoring a hat trick in his first game with the team, and it was the first in team history at the Ford Center. And then
he's gone.
And then after a season and a third of not having a hat trick in the building, we get two in the span of a minute 21. Because right after McLeod completes his hat trick, Nathan Moon completes his, and it was wild. But McLeod was the first star of the game. Moon was the second star of the game. Dylan Clark was the third star of the game with four assists. How often do you hear that? Yeah. Somebody has a 4.9 and they're the third star of the game.
They're an after-mention.
Yeah. But Clark continues to play really well. I also wanted to mention, I thought the key moment early in the game, before Karpovich got pulled, before we scored the three goals in 45 seconds, you really can't overlook how important it was. I think it was probably the first 5 or 6 minutes of the game. McLeod, a new guy with the team. This is his first game with the team, fresh off the bus. He takes a knee-to-knee hit from one of the walleye, and it was not called, and it should have been. It was in the open. It was a blatant
trip at the minimum.
Yeah, it was definitely a penalty of some sort. It was a borderline knee-to-knee hit. McLeod was a little slow to get up. He ended up being fine. But the key moment there was after he gets hit and there's no call, Daniel Tatro goes and just beats the daylights out of the guy that hit him. And for a guy that's a veteran, that's more looked at as an offensive and defensive presence, not necessarily a physical presence, he's not a fighter. But he went down there and he took care of business. He stood up for his teammate, a guy that just got here. And that sends a message to the entire team that we are in this together. The team physically, it's a team sport, so physically you're always playing together. But you can play together without really playing together. And this team now is starting to really play together when you see guys stick up for each other like that. We saw it again on Saturday. There was a spot toward the end of the game where Sebastian Wanstrom got hit. And it was a hip check, and it was maybe not necessarily a dirty hit, but it was still one of those kind of eye-popping hits that get your attention. And after he got hit, two guys, Dylan Clark and Sean Whitney, both went after the guy that he had been hit by. And Clark didn't end up getting to him. Whitney did, and Whitney fought him. And I think to see that two nights in a row, to see guys standing up for new teammates, because Wanstrom's another guy that hasn't been here very long, I think that speaks volumes about the togetherness of this team and how things are coming along. And I was really impressed by Tatro Friday night, though. When he stood up, I thought that really set the tone for the rest of the game, that we're not going to take this. You know, you can hit us, but we're going to come back. And I think it really, if you don't answer that, it could deflate the fans, it could deflate the team, and who knows how that game turns out. But that was a huge moment that really, other than just Five for Fighting, doesn't show up on the stat sheet. It's not one of those things that you can really quantify. But I think it's a huge qualitative advantage to have a guy that's willing to do that stands up for his teammates and sends that message.
And it does, we've talked a lot about chemistry. We've talked about the locker room and the role of the captain, and Tatro is a captain. Even though it's just an A on his jersey, not the C, they are all considered captains when you have those letters, and that's what captains do. That's how you set the tone of what is expected in your locker room. So when there's no captains on the ice and that happens, someone follows along.
Exactly. And, it carried right over. I think the win on Friday gave us a lot of positive momentum into Saturday. We won 4-1 against the Cincinnati Cyclones. which was the first time we'd seen them at home. The Icemen and Cyclones had played four games in Cincinnati already this season. But again, Alan York came out, played well, made 26 saves on 27 shots. Josh Beaulieu continues to play well. He had a goal and two assists in that game. He was a plus three, which
he's crazy,
a
man.
A plus three this season for anyone is just outstanding. But he played well. Clark continues to play well. It was his fifth straight game with a point. He now has 11 points in six games with the Icemen. We talked about how a change of scenery can be all the difference, and boy, it's made a difference for him because he's been lights out since he came here. Also Saturday, worth noting, Nathan Moon scored the teddy bear toss goal that set off the critters flying all over the place. The team said that they collected over 2,100 stuffed animals for 911 Gives
Hope.
Awesome. Which is up a bit from 1,700 last year was what they said that they had collected last year. What I thought was funny was you'll have people that are behind the nets at the ends of the ice that try to get it over the net, and they fail miserably. But depending on the shape of the animal that they're trying to throw, they get stuck. So for the majority of the game on Saturday, there were a handful of stuffed animals stuck in the protective netting, especially at the Icemen attack twice, and I think there were five or six different ones up there. So I don't know how they – I'm sure they'll get them out, but it's an interesting little piece of atmosphere.
I'm not sure that the Ford Center maintenance crew will get them out until they'll just – gravity and dust will eventually
fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone took a picture. I was at home listening to the game due to a freak incident at Swander Ice Arena that put all the games behind that I was reffing. But yeah, someone posted it and with the caption of, and I apologize if they're listening because I can't remember who it was, but they put, "He tried so hard but just didn't make it," and there's this teddy bear in the netting, and the shot was perfect because like they got all the ice and everything else, and like this teddy bear trying to reach it to the ice and never
made
it. Yeah,
it's unfortunate. Some people just have more faith in their arms than they really should. But I went back. I thought it was interesting to kind of see. That was actually the first time since our first teddy bear toss that we won the game. In 2011, last season, Nick Schneider scored the teddy bear toss goal, but we lost the game 5-3 to Fort Wayne. In 2010, Damian Surma scored the teddy bear toss goal against the Bloomington Prairie Thunder, but we lost that game 3-2 in overtime. The only other time that we've won the teddy bear toss game was in 2009 when John Gevard, remember him?
Nope. I don't even remember
him. Me neither. I saw that name and I was like, wow, I vaguely remember that. But the first teddy bear toss ever, we won that game 2-1 against Chi-Town. And I remember that night because we didn't score it until the third period. So tension of what do we do if we don't score?
I do remember that
And we were down 1-0 in the third period, and Gevard scored, and then we scored again to end up winning the game against Chi-Town. But yeah, it's the first time since the first one in 2009 that we actually won the teddy bear toss game. So it was a good game. I'm really liking this rivalry that's building with the Cyclones. Of course, familiarity breeds contempt.
Yes, and don't we get them like 13 times this year?
We play them over a dozen times this season, including, I think, the last two games of the regular season, which could be very important. But we've got...
And those are away as well.
Yeah. But we played them four times in an 11-day span, and in those four games, there were six fights and four misconducts. So I think it's safe to say that we have a little rivalry building here with the Cyclones, which is good. That's our closest geographic rival in this league. There's no team that's closer geographically, so... And speaking on a personal level, I grew up in Indy as an Indianapolis Ice fan, and the two teams I hated the most were the Fort Wayne Comets and the Cincinnati Cyclones. So I told Crom after the game on Saturday that it warmed my heart that we won against the Cyclones at home, and he's like, well, I'm glad we could help.
Just transporting your hate 3 hours south. You brought up Dylan Clark, and again, as we look in the Facebook Maniac Asylum, officiated by Chief Warden Chris Phillips, but people talk about, you know, we hear all this drama about Rich Crom only wants his guys. We've been hearing that for years, and he won't hire an assistant coach, and we need to remove the general manager duties from him. And then we have interesting little tidbits that are shared to us that Rich Crom has asked for assistant coach and have been denied by ownership. So we need to make sure we're focusing blame where it needs to go. But you look at a Dylan Clark, and I know you're going to get into this later, but I mean, this is a great pickup. Nathan Moon has been on this team's target since before the season started, but he didn't want to pull the trigger knowing he was going to have to give up future considerations for it. But once we got to 0-6-1, Crom made a move to bring him in. And you start looking at the club that he is putting together. This is a pretty decent club, and it's all because of the general manager job that Rich Crom has done.
Yeah, and I think you can't overlook the importance of these in-season moves. Sometimes a guy can, especially a guy that's a GM and coach, he can fall in love with the guys that he signed, and you want to go into war with the guys that you wanted. And sometimes you're afraid to make a move because you're essentially admitting a mistake. You don't want to move a guy like Dan Ginder, which we'll get into that momentarily. When you bring a guy like that in to be a marquee part of your team, and then you eventually decide to trade him, you're essentially admitting you screwed up. Whether it's really in your control or not, sometimes things just don't work out.
Yep.
But especially when you have a coach that is also the team's GM, you want to go into battle, and you'll go down with the ship as long as it's the guys that you wanted to go into battle with. And sometimes that's not the right thing to do. Sometimes you just got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And if you've got guys that just aren't working out, sometimes you need to make a move, shake things up. And I think for the most part, the moves that Crom has made have hit pretty well in season so far. Some of the signings in the offseason didn't pan out, but it takes a big man, especially when your job is on the line, to admit that you messed up on this one.
Yep.
And that happens sometimes. No GM has a perfect track record. There's not a one in sports. If there was, they'd go to Vegas and get rich and retire.
Yeah. And not deal with sports and fans anymore.
Exactly. So I think you got to give him a lot of credit for having the balls to go out and make these moves, because every time you make a move in the middle of the season, if it doesn't work out, it's just going to amplify things even worse. Because if you take a guy that's underperforming but you know has potential and you get rid of him, and then he goes somewhere else and lights it up, and the guy that you get for him doesn't do anything for you, it's just going to make things worse. And people will let you know about it, too. So, it takes cojones to make a change in the middle of the season with marquee-type players. And also just to bring in guys that may be on the scrap heap, so to speak, that didn't work out wherever they were, and you bring them in, and if they light it up for you, then it makes you look like a genius.
Yep. Speaking of which, Jennifer Watts, good friend of ours, put on Facebook that she was having a hard time keeping up with all the transactions. And as we all are, especially with the two affiliations that we have, and we're not sure, this is our first time with what belongs to us and what is just being loaned to us,
right,
that actually belongs to St. Louis or Columbus and their other affiliates. The best thing to do, IcemanManiacs.com, and you go to the roster section in the forum that Michael Shockley has put together, and he's got it all broken down. You can know who is actual Iceman property, who is Columbus property, who is St. Louis property, who's on the IR, who's on reserve, who our captains are. It is all spelled out right there. So if you want to hear psycho hockey mom drama, go to Chris Phillips' Maniac Asylum. If you actually want hockey facts and information that will make you a better fan, IcemanManiacs.com.
Yeah, I started out at the beginning of the season just kind of randomly keeping the roster. And as it's gone on, I've started adding more and more information. And, yeah, I have who's on reserve, who's on IR, if they're on IR, what date were they put on IR, what are they out with, how long are they going to be out. We've got who belongs to the affiliates. And there's also differentiations to make even with each deal, in that some of the guys we have from Springfield are Columbus Blue Jackets property, and some of the guys we have from Springfield are not Blue Jackets property. They're actually AHL contracted players that are property of Springfield. So you've got that within each deal, too. We had the same thing with Peoria. Most of the guys we've gotten from Peoria are Blues property. But we also had defenseman Brent Regner. When he was sent down, he was just Peoria property. So I make that differentiation. You see who the veterans are, who the rookies are. I have a complete log of the call-ups that we've had so far as when guys were called up and if they were returned, when they were returned. So there's a lot of information on there. I know it's hard to keep track because, yeah, it seems like every day the Icemen are part of the ECHL transactions page. And it's been a crazy season with all the injuries and all the affiliate moves and stuff.
And NHL lockout.
Yeah, but you can see the updated roster anytime. usually on weekends I don't update it, but during the week I'll catch up from all the moves over the weekend, and it's always updated there on the Maniac message board. Yeah, if you go to IcemanManiacs.com, click over to the Maniac message board, and then in the Iceman forum, there's a thread about transactions, and just scroll down to the bottom of it, and you've got all the moves, and it's pretty crazy, and I don't know that there's another place that really has that level of information, because the team website doesn't go into that much detail as far as updating who's on reserve and who's on IR and all that stuff. And LeagueStat is very, it doesn't really show you that stuff either. It basically just differentiates between if you're on the active roster or if you're not. And if you're not, it doesn't tell you why. It doesn't tell you if they're on reserve, if they're on IR, if they're hurt, how long they're out, any of that stuff. So by monitoring the ECHL transaction stuff, I just try to keep it updated so that everybody has a place to go and find that information. So,
and you can be, your hockey life can be just like my Iceman Insight radio show. Trust Michael Shockley to do all the work for you, and then you just regurgitate what he's already put together, and you look brilliant. So I would actually, if you've got one of those smartphones, I would just have that page on your smartphone when you go to the Ford Center to watch a game and just correct everyone. Oh, no, he's on reserve. Yeah, oh, no, yeah. He is actually property of Peoria, and he is on a 21-day call. All the information's right there you to wow your friends.
You can be the coolest and smartest guy at the party.
Yes, unless you're in 117, and then it's overly dominated by that hockey god,
yeah.
Brad Perkins.
He's the mayor of the asylum.
All right, so we're 25 minutes into the show. We're going to get to our second paragraph on the first page.
Just to follow up about something that we've talked about before, I want to...
Oh, we're not even going to get to the second paragraph?
Oh, no.
Okay. That was your transition.
Yeah, that's my transition.
I thought you were stopping my transition.
I'm a professional here, man. To talk about the Evansville Courier and Press, just briefly, we do want to give credit where it's due. They've taken a lot of heat, including some from us this season, but all three games since last week's show got coverage. Even the road game in Cincinnati last Wednesday, they had a front page story, a full story about it on the front page of the sports section. Friday's game, Randy Beard was there, first time this season that he's been at the Ford Center, and then Saturday, Steve Ford was there, and both of those games got front page coverage on the sports section too. So I think just... there's been a lot of criticism, but we need to give credit when they do, just like we talk about with Rich Crum. You can criticize when things are going poorly, but if things turn around, you need to give credit where it's due. And I did talk to Randy Beard at the game on Friday, and he said right now the current plan is they will have a writer at every December home game except one, and the one that they don't have coverage for is because people are going to be on vacation. So I do just want to shout out to the Courier and Press. The coverage was good. It was appreciated. I know that there's been a little more of an effort from the fans to go read the stories when they do appear and comment on them, so hopefully the message is getting through a little bit.
And just a quick thing about Randy Beard. He's been around the Iceman for 3 years that I know of, since the start of the CHL back at Swander Ice Arena, and he loves hockey. He really does, and he, if let's all go back, all of us 1600 from the first year at Swander. That rink was cold. Yeah. In January and February, that rink was cold. It's not like plush, nice Ford Center now. And Randy Beard was there every game with the laptop, writing up articles.
Yeah.
And he has really done a lot of work. And then, you know, so what happens? He becomes sports editor, and now he can't even enjoy the Ford Center. He ends up having to send other people over there. So Randy Beard, who's done a lot of work already for the Iceman, doesn't even get to enjoy the fruits of his labor at the Ford Center. I was excited to see him there on Friday night.
Yeah, yeah. And I made, a few weeks ago when we first started talking about the Courier, I made a snarky comment on this show saying that they didn't have someone out there because there must have been a Tiddlywinks competition in Poseyville or something. And he heard that and wasn't real happy about it. So when I saw him at the game on Friday, I waited until there was a moment, a break in the action, and I leaned over and said, "So, no Tiddlywinks in Poseyville tonight?" And he just kind of chuckled and looked at me, gave me that kind of, "You're a smart ass" kind of look. But
whoa, hey.
Can we say that?
No.
You're a smart smart posterior.
Where are we now?
Oh, we're moving on to injuries and transactions.
Okay.
All right. We are now 26 games into the season. We have lost 133 man games to injury. We have had 38 different players suit up for the Iceman, and that does not include the new acquisitions that we'll get to in a moment. It's ridiculous. Did want to follow up a little bit. You and I talked about the guys that we acquired last week, Brett Ponich and Sebastian Wanstrom.
Yeah, I need to, our first redaction, he is not a poor man's Hal Gill.
No, he's pretty good.
He's really good, especially at this level. He is a Pronger. He's a poor man's Chris Pronger at this level. He's got offensive skills. He moves the puck. His head is up. He skates really well for, what is he, 6'7"?
Yeah.
I mean, he skates better.
He's huge, and he moves.
Austin Medeski was a big guy, but he didn't skate like Ponich skates.
No.
This guy, get him while you can. He's another guy to go out, spend your money early and often in December, because he's going to be gone pretty soon.
Yeah, he's solid. So I was happy to see him maybe exceed our initial expectations a little bit. And holy cow, Wanstrom is good. He's got sick speed and skill.
Yep.
He was dipsy dueling around some guys like nobody's business. So it's going to be exciting to see what he can do once he really adjusts to this league and his teammates and maybe hit some chemistry with his line mates, because that kid's got some talent. But to move on to all the transactions last week, Paul Karpowicz was indeed returned from Peoria. We figured when we recorded this show that he would be, and he was indeed sent down. Carlo Fanucci ended up being released. Tyler Shalast also was released, which I called.
Yep. It's a shame. I really liked the way he played in the C last year. He just could not gel up here.
Yeah. Trent Vogelhuber was finally moved to reserve. He had been hurt for a little while, but he had still been on the active roster, but they finally moved him to reserve. Although it sounds like he's probably going to come back this Friday, so he'll come off a reserve shortly, and they'll have to put somebody else on. Last Thursday, Jared Lavender was cut, which I was a little sad to see that. I thought he was really good in limited action. He was cut to make room for Wade McLeod, who was sent down by Springfield. Like we were talking earlier, he's actually one of those guys that's Springfield property, not Blue Jackets property. But they just sent him down to get some work over the weekend while they were on a road trip.
And did he.
Boy, did he. Yeah, he was excellent. But he just played Friday and Saturday and has now been called back up. Before Friday's game, Todd Robinson was activated from reserve.
Yeah. Boy, I thought that was the death knell to this season.
Yeah, no kidding. He was a little bit limited in his role. He didn't play quite as many shifts. He wasn't just on the ice as much. But we'll see if that changes once he's fully back healthy, because I'm sure he's not 100% yet. Or if maybe it's just kind of refining the way he's used on this team. But we'll find out in time. Robin Dore was put on reserve also on Friday. And then there was a big three-player trade with Orlando, which we'll get to in a minute. And then after the weekend's games, on Sunday, we mentioned McLeod was called back up to Springfield. Alan York was also called up to Springfield. So we're already, like, 2 months into the season, we're up to 10 different guys have been called up, which is crazy, on top of all the injuries. And as we mentioned, breaking news earlier that Paul Dayton has been sent down by Springfield. So that was all the moves over the weekend. On Monday, Robin Dore was then reactivated from reserve, but I would imagine with Dayton having been sent down, he'll be put back on reserve now.
Yep.
Also, Jim McKenzie was put on reserve. He does not count against the four-veteran limit when he's on reserve. Guys on reserve and IR do not count towards that limit.
Got it.
And because of the big trade with Orlando, we acquired a veteran, so one of the veterans had to go, and it wasn't going to be Robinson or Tatro or Jens. So McKenzie was the odd man out. And then also on Monday, we signed a winger named Matt Shepke. He started the season with Greenville. He had been released on December 3rd. He only had 2 points in 7 games with them, but he's had better numbers in the past. This is his fourth full pro season, mainly in the ECHL, but a few games in the AHL too. He had 46 points in 69 games in the ECHL during his rookie year. And his second year, he didn't play as much. I don't know if he had injuries or what, but last year he had 42 points in 70 games in the E, so he's not going to be one of those guys that just goes out and lights the scoreboard on fire, but he should be a decent second-line type player that maybe could drop down and play some energy line too. So that'll be an interesting acquisition. I think he just got in town, so he'll probably make his debut this weekend, so we'll see what he brings to the table. But the big move on over the weekend was the trade with Orlando. Before Friday's game, Rich Crom sent Dan Gander and Dale Mahovsky to the Solar Bears for 33-year-old winger Kevin Baker, who is a veteran. This is his ninth pro season. He's had over 300 ECHL games and over 80 AHL games. So he knows this league, he knows the teams, and he's a proven scorer at this level, too. In 2008-2009 with the Everblades in Florida, he had 102 points, including 57 goals, which is insane. And that was, what, only 4 or 5 seasons ago, so it's not like that was forever ago. Last year in the E with the Stockton Thunder, he had 56 points in 68 games, which is obviously not 102 points, but still pretty solid numbers. He was off to a relatively slow start this year. He had 9 points in 18 games with Orlando, but as we've seen with Dylan Clark, sometimes a change of scenery is all it takes to light a guy on fire again. So I think it's a move worth making. Mahovsky and Gender were both underperforming. Mahovsky only had 9 points and was a minus 14. So he was on pace for 27 points this season after having 54 last year. Gender had 10 points and was a minus 9. He was only on pace for 30 points after having 73 last year. So even though the guy we acquired is perhaps off to a slow start, the guys we sent are also off to a slow start, and it could end up being one of those trades that turns out to be a benefit for both teams. If Gender and Mahovsky heat up down in Orlando and Baker plays well for us, it could be a win-win for both.
I really liked Mahovsky. When I heard about the trade, in my opinion, Mahovsky's points were down, but he and Dale were playing on that energy third line, checking line, so I don't think he got a lot of opportunities to score, though he did get moved up to the second line once all the injuries started to hit.
Well, and you also have to consider, when we went through that stretch where we had a ton of D and Crom was playing 8D every night, Mahovsky was the center who had two defensemen playing with him, so that plays into it too. I liked him defensively. You wouldn't necessarily think you'd say that about a guy that was minus 14. I thought he was pretty responsible defensively. He hadn't done a whole lot offensively, but I feel a little worse about parting ways with him than I do about Gender.
To me, when I heard about the trade, it felt like we had to give up Dale Mahovsky so someone would take Gender off of our hands.
Yeah.
And I have nothing against Dan Gender other than, you know, we made an offer to Bisek. He wanted more money. He left.
Right.
Gender was brought in to replace Bisek. You look at the points and everything else, and he, you know, it was what first or second show we talked about who is going to replace Brian Bisek in his 30 goals. Mm-hmm. And you talked about maybe it's done by committee. I think you said that, didn't you? That it would be multiple guys that would come
Brian
in.
Brian Bisek by committee.
Or was it Gender? And it obviously wasn't Gender or Gender because Coach has sent, I mean, he was a healthy scratch. Then he was given power play time, and now he's been moved on. So it just didn't work out.
Yeah, and I think Crom did it because, A, he thinks it'll improve the team. Also, and he made this point on Iceman Live this week, that with guys starting to get healthy, you got to open up roster spots somehow. So if you can trade 2-for-1 and upgrade to where that one is an excellent player, then it's a move you got to seriously consider making. And he also said that Baker was available. It's not like he was a problem in the locker room or something like that. He was available because Orlando needed to move a veteran because they wanted to sign Ryan Reeves, who is an NHL player from the St. Louis Blues. And they did sign Ryan Reeves after they dealt Baker. So that was the reasoning behind that move. And if they want to sign an NHL guy, cool. More power to him. But if we get a guy like Baker that can really produce out of the deal, then it could work for us too.
You are listening to Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley and the Dirty D here on 96.9 The Wire. And now, our favorite segment of the week. Our best segment of the week, because I don't talk a lot. Shockers. Hockey. Rock Song of the Week.
I'm going to make this intro quick since we're already way behind.
We're actually not doing too bad.
Oh, huh.
In perspective.
Yeah. So this is, because we're in the midst of Hanukkah, this is dedicated to the Halbers and all of our Jewish Eichmann fans. This is the Hanukkah song by Adam Sandler.
Put on your yarmulke, here comes Hanukkah. So much Hanukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we have 8 crazy nights. When you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's a list of people who are Jewish. Just like you and me. David Lee Roth lights the menorah. So do James Conkirk Douglas and the late Dinah Shore. Guess who eats together at the Carnegie Deli?
Bowser from Sha-na-na, and Arthur Fonzarelli. Paul Newman's half Jewish, Goldie Hawn's half too. Put them together, what a fine looking Jew. You don't need Deck the Halls or Jingle Bell Rock, cause you can spin a dreidel with Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock, both Jewish. Put on your yarmulke, it's time for Hanukkah. The owner of the Seattle Supersonicas celebrate Hanukkah. O.J. Simpson, not a Jew. But guess who is? Hall of Famer Rod Carew. He converted. We got Ann Landers and her sister, dear Abby. Harrison Ford's a quarter Jewish. Not too shabby. Some people think that Ebenezer Scrooge is. Well, he's not, but guess who is? All three Stooges. So many Jews are in showbiz. Tom Cruise isn't, but I heard his agent is. Tell your friend Veronica, it's time you celebrate Hanukkah. Hope I get a harmonica on this lovely, lovely Hanukkah. So drink your gin and tonica and smoke your marijuana. If you really, really wanna go, have a happy, 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 happy Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah.
And we are back here on Iceman Insights with senior writer and, doggone it, I need to write these things down.
Webmaster.
Webmaster
and
senior writing.
Do I need to start adding my title to the notes every week?
It wouldn't help. In bold. Just give me my talking points, Mike, and then everything else will be fine. And Vice President of Offbeat Shenanigans, Michael Shockley, here with the Dirty Deed, 96.9 The Wire. And first, we start with a disclaimer.
Yes, brief little disclaimer in relation to the Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week. Near the end of the song, Mr. Sandler advises everyone to smoke your marijuanica, and we just wanted to say that WYIR and Iceman Insights do not advise smoking your marijuanica. We do not condone that behavior.
No, indeed not. So, thank you.
Yeah, so moving on.
Iceman trivia.
We have a little Iceman trivia. Last week, we talked about all of the Schneiders that have played in Iceman history. In case people didn't know, none of those Schneiders were actually related. CJ was from New York, TJ was from Pennsylvania, and Nick was from Minnesota.
And two of the three were cool.
Yeah, that's true. One of them, not so much. But the next little piece of trivia that I have for you, sort of related to that, is through the history of the Iceman, there have been three different sets of brothers that have played for the team. Can you name all three sets?
Do me and my brother doing the radio broadcast in the championship year count?
No.
Darn it. All right. So does John Schneider, not John Schneider, wasn't he like Luke Duke or Bo Duke or something like that?
Yes, he was. Yeah.
John Rickert and Jason, or John Reichert and Jason Reichert.
No, they don't count either. They weren't players.
So, you did say players?
Yes.
Okay. Well, obviously the Jens is.
Yes.
Or is it Jens-I?
Jen-I? Jen-I? Sound like I'm talking from Forrest Gump.
And
yes, the Jens, they are from Minnesota, and Matt is 4 years older than Aaron, for those who didn't know.
And then
the other two sets were both from our first season in the AHA.
AHA. Boy, I can't remember. That was a long time ago. We had like 89 transactions that year.
Yeah, that year was crazy. You give up?
I give up.
All right. The two sets of brothers in that first year, one was a set of twins, Earl and Ed Hudick.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember
them. They were from Michigan. They were actually twins. The other set of brothers was Shane and Kyle Heffernan. They were a couple of Ontario boys. They were not twins. Shane was about a year older than Kyle.
Shane also, worst haircut in the history of hockey.
I agree.
That was some nasty mullet, 80s shaved awful. In... slash half mohawk, but with on an angle. It was hideous.
Yeah. Also, I do want to say there's no truth to the rumor that Jose Vasquez had a brother named Hose B. He did not play for the Iceman.
Wow. I actually almost laughed at that.
That's an old joke.
Now, I wanted to have like a sound segment ready for the, do you remember the old black and white TV show that said, do not, we control the horizontal, we control the vertical, because obviously Michael Shockley, yes,
yeah,
that was it, good call. But Michael Shockley obviously has some sick mental abilities to control the actions of Iceman fans and the city at large.
If I really had that much power, I would use it for evil.
Ah,
not for saving the
poor Canadians that are oppressed here in the greater Evansville area.
I would have money being thrown at me if I had that much power. we just to kind of wrap up. It's amazing the reach that this show apparently has. Last week, in talking about the issues at the Ford Center, I just kind of briefly ranted about
that was like the sixth point.
Yeah,
no one stepped up and took care of points 1 through 5, including the
problems.
Ice and the puck glass. Marks on the glass. But anyway, so to the sixth or seventh point mentioned in passing.
I just kind of said, what happened to the Canadian flag, because it had been taken down at the Ford Center? Well, apparently that really set off an incredible chain of events. After listening to the show, Chris Phillips posted on Facebook in the asylum that he had been told by one of the Venue Works employees that the mayor's office had ordered the flag taken down. Well, that just got things going crazy. Over 400 total comments on Facebook about this issue. There was this big campaign called hashtag Bring Back the Maple Leaf. People were writing the mayor's office, including myself. Since I sort of started the movement, I decided I should definitely participate. So I sent one of many who sent a letter to the mayor online. A couple people called, and lo and behold, by the time we played Friday night, the Canadian flag was back up in the rafters next to Old Glory, where it belongs. In the process, we sort of made Friday an unofficial Canada night. There was no official promotion for that game, so it worked out well. We made it Canada night. People brought Canadian flags, and people had Canadian face paint.
I didn't see any donuts, and I didn't see any French fries eaten with mayonnaise, which is very Canadian.
There was no Tim Hortons in the building.
There was no Tim Hortons.
Yeah,
so
sad.
And there was no poutine.
But, it was amazing the response it got. Everyone just got behind it and wanted the Canadian flag back. Eyewitness News, the folks at Local 7 and WHT Local, channels 7 and 25, they actually came out and they covered the issue, and they made it their lead story at 9 and 10 that night. So the good thing for us is, rather than just kind of flying blind, they actually pushed the mayor's office and got a response out of them as far as why it happened in the first place. And according to what Eyewitness News was told, the city's excuse is that the mayor received complaints about the flag being there. And I don't know if this is 100% true or not, but Rich Crom was supposedly told that it was Aces basketball fans that complained. Because apparently they think they have a monopoly on the Ford Center, and if they don't need the Canadian flag, it just shouldn't be there. But that's another discussion for another day. So apparently after the Aces fans or whoever complained, the mayor's office talked to Venue Works. They discussed it, and they mutually decided to take the flag down because the ECHL does not have any Canadian teams. We're ignoring the fact that so many of the players are Canadian and that any barn you go to in America that has hockey also has a Canadian flag. But apparently the Icemen were not consulted at that point. The team was not asked whether or not they think it should be there. So apparently the mayor and the Venue Works, they didn't realize that it would upset the Iceman fans. They gave the stock line, oh, no disrespect was intended, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, the Iceman fans complained louder than the Aces fans who complained about it being
what
there.
What a shock.
And the flag was put back up. So, apparently it definitely got the attention of the players, because the fun fact is, on Friday, the two players that had hat tricks, both Canadians.
How about that?
Yeah, so the power of this show, and you know, I jokingly tried to take all the credit for starting it, and obviously it wasn't just me. If I was the only person who griped about it, I'm sure the city would have said, shut up. and move on. But big credit to all the fans that participated and talked about it and brought flags and contacted the mayor, because I think it's proof that when enough people complain, your voice can be heard. So even if it's just something as seemingly inconsequential as a flag in a sports arena, it's just proof that sometimes the squeaky wheel does get the grease. So now we just need to squeak about the Indiana flag, which is still wrong, too.
Yeah, and didn't someone say that, like, the lettering's backwards on that? Was that a Chris Lemon?
The lettering is backwards to where Indiana starts with A and ends with I. But also the emblem, the state emblem that's on the flag, is turned 90 degrees so that it's
like
upright.
They did the Maple
right,
Leaf flag.
Yeah, like they had with the Maple Leaf. So it's turned 90 degrees so that the emblem appears upright even when the flag is flown on its side, which is how it is flown. So it's I don't know how you even do that. I mean, who makes that decision that, yeah, this will look good. Let's do that. Let's completely screw up the state's official flag.
The same guy in the 90s that put a glowing puck on TV for Fox Network. That's where these decisions come from. Yeah. And the guy that canceled Firefly.
Yeah.
Former PA announcer Jeff Walker just walking into the building.
Yeah, walking into the building.
Hey,
Jeff Walker.
I did that on purpose.
Yeah, boy, you're...
Notice how Steven Rickard is too good to walk into this building.
Yeah, well, he lives a little bit farther away.
I don't want to hear any excuses. He drove to Swander in a snowstorm before. He can come up here to drink a coffee with me.
That's
Quit
true.
Stealing Brian Patafi from me.
Well, maybe if you bring some ladies in here, he'll come...
Oh, I need to have my own set of icicles.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe we need Stevicles.
Stevicles. Well, there
I've tried to merge Steve and testicles together here.
Yeah.
Like testicles.
Yeah.
No.
Let's not.
All right.
I did have an experience with Stevicles one night in Battle Creek when we were recording on there or broadcasting on the radio, but.
Anyways.
Family show.
Yes. We might not hit double digits. This could be the last one, folks. Rich Crom, Iceman Live.
Yes.
Am I segueing?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
It'll work. Rich Crom was the guest on Iceman Live this week. It's the first time I went this season. I have a 13-month-old, so I don't go to shows very often anymore. But I gave him a chance. I wanted to bring up the topic of Todd Robinson and how fans have been so critical of him as far as, you know, looking at his plus minus and just basically saying he should hang up his skates and become an assistant coach.
Not all the fans.
Not
just,
all. No.
Just some. The Faker fans.
Yeah. Not the Jeff Walker kind of fans. But, so I thought his response was really interesting. He said a lot of the same stuff we've been saying to defend Todd, that he's a proven scorer, he's a proven champion, he sees the ice so well, he makes his teammates better, he hates to lose, he's a known commodity. All those things that more or less we've been beating the drum of for a while now. But he also brought up a great point that you can't read too much into a poor plus minus, especially with a guy like Todd, because in his role, his plus minus is hurt by having a lot of his offensive production on the power play and also being out there at the end of games when we're down trying to score, because then we give up empty netters while he's on the ice. Because for those who don't know how plus minus works, if you score a power play goal, that doesn't give you a plus one. But if you're out on the ice and you give up an empty net goal, it counts against you. So those two elements of his game do indeed make a difference on his plus minus. So I looked up his stats, and last year he was minus five, which is not good, but not as bad as how he's been this year. But part of why he was only minus five last year was that 52% of his points were scored at even strength. Well, this year, only 33% of his points have been scored at even strength. So when you score fewer even strength points, that hurts your plus minus. Well, he's minus 15, which is right now tied for worst in the league. And I think that's proof of what Crom said, that you can't read as much into plus minus. The other element that Crom mentioned was empty net goals and how that hurts your plus minus too. And it's true. We've given up five empty netters this season, and Todd was on the ice for four of them.
Because you're going to go with your best out there to try to reduce that one goal,
exactly.
Two goal deficit.
And the fifth time that he wasn't out there for the empty netter, it was while he was out hurt. So you figure if he hadn't been hurt, he probably would have been out there for that
one
too.
He'd be at minus 16 and leading the league.
Right, exactly, number one. So I thought it was, you know, as much as we like to think what we say really matters, it really doesn't in the eyes of many. We're just more or less fans with a certain level of experience from different perspectives. But when Rich Crom says that stuff, hopefully maybe it carries a little extra weight compared to when we say it.
500 NHL games for Rich Crom. NHL.
Yeah. Yeah,
so.
He's kind of been around the block a time or two.
Yes.
But Crum on Iceman Live, he was a great guest in the midst of kids asking about his favorite color and Terry Ficarelli making up fake true-false games, like claiming that Crum, before he met his wife Jackie, was engaged to Madonna.
Weird.
Yeah. In the midst of all that, there was actually some good information. Somebody asked him about the slow start, and as a coach, when the team starts 0-6-1, how do you respond? And he more or less confirmed what we said early in the season, that you don't blow it up. You don't overreact. You know, you look at the games and you figure there's probably a couple of those that we should have won. We played well enough to win, but you have a breakdown or you have a couple of mistakes, and then a game goes the other way. And his approach was, instead of blowing it up and freaking out, just identify what the problems are and fix them. And I think that kind of demeanor, especially with a young team with players coming from all over the place, is really critical.
Oh, I agree. Okay. And and obviously he saw it, you know, and it's been a weird year with the NHL lockout, having two affiliates. So you have to work your roster, and you can't. I reffed the inter-squad scrimmages, and the team that I reffed, I was disappointed this year. I've done it for 2 years now, because I knew that this team that I'm reffing the first week of training camp's only 2 weeks long, was none of these guys were going to be on the team.
Yeah.
Other than the ones that I knew, the Todd Robinsons and the Phil Plants and the Josh Bolios. But I knew, I mean, Jason Dale showed up the last day. So I knew this first week of training camp was a complete scrap.
Yeah.
So, and it just takes time. And then you see, you know, so we bring in, we make a trade for a Nathan Move. We make a trade for a Dylan Clark. And then we make a big trade. Obviously, one of the problems that had needed to be fixed was Dan Gender.
Yeah.
And so that move has been made as well. And that we're 2 months into the season, and we're just outside of a playoff spot. But it takes time. You can't just lose a game 6. I mean, how many people with that kind of mindset would see this 6-1 loss by Alan York when we got shelled in Cincy 2 weeks ago and has said he was horrible and threw him out?
Right.
And he wasn't horrible. He was rusty because he was coming off an injury.
Right.
So it does take time.
Yeah. And you mentioned Dylan Clark in there. That was another thing that someone asked Crum about, and why he was available, basically. And South Carolina waived him because they just didn't have room for him. And we wondered why his numbers were so far down, because he only had 3 points when he was with them. And it turns out Crum said he was the 10th forward, so he wasn't getting a regular shift. He wasn't getting any power play time. So if you bring him here and put him in a different situation and give him a different role, that can really turn things around, and it has. And apparently Crum went after him over the summer. He wanted to bring him in during the offseason, didn't get him. But then when South Carolina cut him and made him available, it was a no-brainer to bring him in, because it was the guy you wanted in the first place.
And again, we talk about, some people have complained about Crum wearing both hats as the coach and GM. And here's a coach in the midst of a losing streak being able to track Dylan Clark and how much time he's getting. So he knows he's a 10th forward playing for South Carolina.
Right.
I mean, there is constant communications between these coaches and GMs throughout this league, you know, and with Rich Crum being around 500 games in the NHL, they know a lot of people. Brian Patafi was on the show a few weeks ago when they went to Cincy, because I think the head coach there, Rich Crum was an assistant to years ago, and Brian Patafi worked for him at a different stop. So there's a whole network of relationships that is all over hockey.
Yeah. Well, and I thought it was interesting too. One of the things Crum said was, somebody asked if he had scouts, and at this level you don't have
scouts.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a scout at this level. You just have friends and people you know, and former teammates and former coaches and former players and whatnot. But somebody asked, when a guy's name comes up as being available, like with the Baker trade, when you hear that Kevin Baker is available, what do you do? How do you scout him if you've never seen the guy play? And Crum said, well, you know, he'll talk to the guy's former coaches and talk to former teammates, see if any of the guys that he has on his team now have ever played with him or what they know of him. But the interesting thing to me was, he also said one of the first things he does when a guy's name's come up, he goes to HockeyDB and looks at his stats, which is the same thing we would do. So there you go. HockeyDB is insider information for everyone, basically, because if it's good enough for Rich Crum, it's good enough for me.
DB stands for Derek Benigni.
Yeah. We'll go with that. On the topic of the affiliates, he did mention, I asked how often he talks to the affiliates at the higher levels, the parent clubs. And he said that he talks to all of them at least once a week. The Peoria general manager wants a report on their prospects after every game. And sometimes he'll even talk to the Springfield GM on a daily basis. So that's another element of his job that that wasn't there last year, that is just sucking up time, basically, that he's got to basically give a report card to the upper-level executives on how their players are doing. So that's another element of his job that people maybe don't think about, that's just, you know, that takes time to do stuff like that.
That's actually free scouting for the Peoria team, yeah. Turning their affiliate head coach into a scout.
Yeah, exactly. Also, in general, Crom on Iceman Live, he praised the play of Josh Beaulieu and Jesse Perrin. He also praised Daniel Tatro and Matt Jens. I thought those, it was just worth mentioning that some of those guys have their critics too. Maybe not so much Beaulieu and Perrin, but Tatro and Jens have been the subject of some negativity at times this year. And some of it is certainly warranted, but when the coach says they're playing well and they're doing good things, then hopefully that might quiet the stop fanning the flames a little bit. But I also talked to him a little bit after the show, off the record, quote unquote. Well, not really off the record, just off the air. And I asked him about the Canadian flag deal, whether or not they had noticed. And he said that he and the players did notice. They practiced at the Ford Center the day that it had been taken down, and they immediately noticed. Obviously, they didn't exactly make a push to get it back, but the fans did. And he did say that he's glad it's back, and he wanted to thank the fans for the efforts to get it back. So on behalf of Rich Crom, thanks to everyone who took part in that movement. We talked a little bit about the NHL lockout. He said, obviously, like everyone, he hopes it'll end soon.
I
don't think so.
Season's over.
I agree.
You heard it here back in October.
Yeah. He thinks, and I tend to agree with him, that so far the reason why it's not getting solved is that the players have made all the concessions and they've made all the compromising and the owners just won't budge on anything. And he thinks unless the owners come to their senses and want to compromise and actually negotiate, it's not gonna end well.
That's funny because that's not the vibe I've gotten for Brian Patafi.
Really?
Yeah. So now I just want to put Rich Crom and Brian Patafi in a room, bring up this topic, and put two mics on them.
Oh boy!
Yeah,
that'd be a good show.
My money's on Crom.
Yeah,
I think all the funny jokes will come from Patafi, but I think Patafi will be sporting the black eye. And the debate lost by the end of it.
There's going to be electrical equipment strewn about the room.
But hopefully, we're going to work on that here at WYR.
Put them both in the sin bin.
That'd be awesome.
Also, during the show, Crom, someone asked about how, if the lockout were to end before the season is over, how it would affect us. And Crom, again, said what we had been saying, that it wouldn't affect the Icemen as much as it would affect other teams. The teams like Alaska that are loaded with NHL players, or some of the teams that don't have NHL players but have gotten a bunch of AHL players sent down, those are the teams that's going to hurt more. The Icemen probably won't have as many guys that would get called up, so you might not see as much of a difference for us as you would for some of the other teams. But again, at this point, that's probably more a hypothetical than anything. I don't really think it's going to come to that. I think the season's not happening.
Nope, me either.
And the final thing from Crom that I talked to him about after the show was, I got a couple of injury updates and kind of tweaking some information we had before. First off, the assumption was that Austin Medeski's wrist surgery would keep him out for the rest of the season. And Rich said that it will not, in all likelihood. They're actually expecting him back probably in February or March. Now, it's not necessarily guaranteed that he would come back here. It depends on how things are in Springfield at the time, or if the lockout's over. The Blue Jackets may have some guys, and Springfield may have openings where they need him up there right away. But if he does come back in February or March and the lockout is still ongoing, or at that point, if the season has been canceled, we could certainly see Medeski back down the stretch. Phil Plante's injury, on the other hand, is a little bit worse than expected. Rich said he doesn't expect Plante to come back until March, which is probably about a month longer than we originally thought.
And the season ends March 30th unless we make the playoffs. So
Correct. He's
looking like end of the season potential injury here.
Possible, yeah. And then the other thing is Oliver Gabriel is making good progress. Rich said he thinks he will start skating around or just after Christmas, and he could certainly return to the lineup sometime in January.
That'd be awesome.
So we could have Gabriel back sooner rather than later, which is good.
It is good, but like you brought up earlier in the show, that means someone's got to go.
Yeah. So, what do you do to make room for it?
Yeah. So as soon as the supercomputer stops calculating man games lost, that means then you got to get rid of roster personnel.
Yeah.
We got a tough upcoming weekend here. First time in a long time, all three on the road, Kalamazoo, Toledo, and Wheeling. Boy, that's a weird kind of way to tour it. But that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It says here it's a 1 o'clock start in Wheeling, so not even the 5 o'clock start.
Yeah, that's going to be rough after playing Saturday night in Toledo. I'm sure they'll hit the bus as soon as that game ends. They probably won't get into Wheeling until, I don't know, the wee hours of the morning at 3, 4, 5 in the morning. Then they got to get up the next morning and play. That Sunday game is going to be tough. Wheeling's not that good of a team, but when you're talking about that kind of schedule, it makes a winnable game certainly less winnable than it otherwise would be.
What's your what are you thinking best case scenario for three games this weekend? What would be like? What would you say is par? What would you be happy with?
I would be happy with 3 out of 6 points.
That's what I was thinking too. Win, loss, and an overtime loss.
Yeah, I would be happy with that. Anything better than that is gravy.
Yeah, and I'm even fine with 1 and 2 because I think, but that's a tough Sunday afternoon ticket right there.
I think Kalamazoo is going to be tough. I think probably the game that's most winnable there is Saturday just because we've had Toledo's number and it's a Saturday, and that's what we do. We win on Saturdays.
Yes,
we've won 6 in a row, so we got to keep that streak going. So if I had to throw out a prediction, I'll say shootout loss on Friday, win on Saturday, loss on Sunday.
Well, we will see. I think
I'll probably be completely wrong.
Toledo has a problem with Nathan Moon. I don't know what that story is, but I saw it that Sunday a few weeks back when they played here. When was it? I don't remember. Was it the second? What's the date today? That was the last one.
Today is Wednesday the 12th.
So, but yeah, it was. And then they came back here and on Friday night, and I kept seeing them target Nathan Moon. Yeah. I mean, and I even saw someone posted in the Asylum about, you know, why would Moon tempt fate with possibly taking an instigator? He's been getting pushed around, and we talked a little bit about Beach needing a little bit more discipline, and Matt Jens is getting a lot of grief in social media circles about the some of the penalties. But I think the one thing you got to understand on that ice is you've got to make a name for yourself, and sometimes you got to force people to respect you, and you force people to respect you by hitting them hard with your stick.
Yeah.
Don't take that to the schoolyard, children, but that's sometimes the way it works in hockey. And I really like Nathan Moon's game, but doesn't he come across a little bit shorter player, like a Martin St. Louis kind of player out there?
He's not very big.
And he's going to have to fight for every ounce of space that he gets. And sometimes, I mean, I have seen these guys chipping at him all the way down the ice, back behind the play that the referee can't see, and sometimes you just got to swat a mug.
Yeah, and I think that's what happened on in the last game against Toledo. Is he had been getting hit behind the play and a little stick here and there, and toward the end of the game he had had enough, and he decided to take matters into his own hands and try to beat the daylights out of somebody. And he's lucky he didn't get an instigator, because the guy he fought he wasn't really a willing combatant at first. He eventually did give in and fight, but Moon was clearly the guy who wanted to start it. And in the final couple minutes of the game, you could very well have gotten an instigator and a game misconduct, and then you would have had to sit out the next game. But thankfully, they only called a roughing minor instead of an instigator, which is a judgment call.
It is, and a lot of people get on the refs, a lot of ref haters out there. But refs understand the game, and there are times when you can't give a penalty for something, but you see what's going on. And you take all of that into account when you're about ready to start handing out penalties. And I'm pretty sure these refs have seen the rough things that are happening that aren't quite penalties, but Moon's getting picked on. And so when he finally loses it, they give him a roughing instead of an instigator. So the refs understand. Yeah. The refs' job, refs don't want to call penalties. They just want to manage the game. That's all they want to do, and they want to manage it how it makes sense to the hockey gods. You know, that's our whole goal, is we want to write a story about why this happened and how it happened and how we dealt with it.
Yeah, and I think a big part of officiating, it's not just knowing the rules and knowing the black and white of the rules. There's a lot of gray areas, even if it's not officially in the rule book. A lot of officiating and knowing when to call penalties and when not to is about context. You have to have watched everything that's going on in the game and understand, if I call this, how's it going to have an effect on the game? If I let this go, how's it going to have an effect on the game? And there's a lot more to the judgment of officiating than just whether or not that looks like a penalty. It's, should I call that penalty?
Well, it's a lot like the speed limit. I mean, how many people out here, when they drive and see the 50-mile-an-hour speed limit on the Lloyd, set their cruise control at 50?
Yeah.
So every time you're at 51 and 52 and 53, are you speeding?
Right.
By the book of the law, you are speeding.
Right.
But you'd be way upset if some cop pulled you over for doing 51 on the Lloyd
right. And
you're driving in the right lane. It's the same with refereeing. You have this book of rules that a stick cannot be used on a player's body. But yet we see people take a little slash here, a little whack to the shin guards there. So you have to manage it.
Yeah, you judge the severity of the action and what led to it and what the results will be. What are the ramifications of whether or not I call this?
Final thoughts?
I was told that I was supposed to mention Ivy's new boots this week,
yeah,
but she's not here.
She is not here.
So I guess I won't mention Ivy's new boots. We'll save that for another day when she's here in order to get on and talk about her boots. But
she still is planning on us to have our Iceman Insight sleepover.
I look forward to it. I've had the pleasure at the last couple home games and at Iceman Live on Monday to meet a few listeners of the show. I think when we started doing this, we kind of had an idea that people that we know, that the longtime fans that know us and our wives. would listen. But I don't know that we necessarily knew that anyone else would listen. And it turns out there are people that I've never met before that are listening and enjoying the show and have sought me out at games to compliment us on the show and say that they enjoy it and they're being entertained and informed at the same time, which I guess is kind of our goal here, is we want to be entertaining but also talk about the game in a way that perhaps helps new fans and enjoy it more and just understand the game better. So to all the new folks that are watching that don't know either of us from Adam, or at least didn't when they first tuned in, thanks for listening. Remember that if you are listening to this on WYIR and you miss an episode, or if you miss part of an episode, you can always go to IcemanManiacs.com and download these shows. The Iceman Insight segments are available for free as podcasts on IcemanManiacs.com.
For now.
thanks to everyone who's listening, friends and strangers alike. We're all Iceman fans. We're all part of this big, goofy family, and we appreciate you, and if you're enjoying it, please tell everyone else and help us boost the audience even more.
One of the other things I wanted to bring up was, we talked about in the first couple of episodes that this is accountability radio. It's not talk radio.
Yeah.
And we like talking about hockey. We want to hear people's insights on juggling lines or trading players. We have no problem with anyone saying anything about they want to get rid of a player. We don't like not having the facts to back it up. Mm-hmm. You can't say, oh, he's not hustling, he's not trying. That stuff doesn't work on this radio show. You want to say, we need a right-hand shot for the second line, then go out and find a right-hand shot in the stats and say, we need to trade for this guy.
Yeah.
So anyone, get a hold of us on Facebook, IcemanManiacs.com, The Asylum. We try to monitor all of it, so we're always looking for input. You've been listening to Iceman Insights on 96.9 The Wire, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer and webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com. All your Iceman hockey information anytime you want it. Only place in the tri-state, IcemanManiacs.com.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.